Okay, Jack, this is a We Should Do This Again Sometime podcast ad, take one.
In a world where laughter was king.
No, in a world, Jack.
What do you mean, no, in a world?
It's not that kind of podcast.
In a land that...
No, in a land either.
In a time...
Nah, I don't think so.
In a land before time.
Jack, this is a cartoon movie, and we may get sued if you use that. Can you say We Should Do This Again Sometime is hosted by Kat Chinetti and V. Mark Robb, please?
One man.
No.
When your life is no longer your own.
What does that mean?
When everything you know is wrong.
Okay, bro, that's enough. We should do this again sometime with Kat and Mark coming to a podcast app near you. Someone get this guy out the booth, please.
No, I like it in here.
Oh, hold on. We didn't ask you this. This has to be in the episode. You never talked about how you felt about the ICP disc.
I was hoping like, you were going to say that. I was hoping you were going to say that.
Oh, this man. Is the episode still going.
I missed it.
The episode's still going.
This is going to be the beginning of the episode. This is the beginning of the episode. So you cut this out and put it at the beginning, and then you drop your intro music, and extra then you come into editing. Where we started.
All right. Well,
I could do that in my sleep.
Oh, no,
go ahead.
I got you. Okay, so... the reason I didn't listen to ICP till 2010 or 2009 was because of that skit.
Wow.
Oh, because of mine?
Yeah.
F-Words, dope and silent gay, claiming Detroit, but y'all are 20 miles away. Oh, man.
Which I'm glad I didn't, because then when I did get into them, I was able to go through all the diss tracks that led to that skit being made. Because they have a song called Slim Agnes, where they remade. You've heard it before, okay? Yeah, that's one of the members of Twisted doing an Eminem impression over the whole track, and Eminem got word of that by somebody, and so that's why the disses are on this record. But yeah, I'll just say, just to keep it short, that. This is considered basically like a pivotal horrorcore record, to where there are tons of rappers nowadays who are juggalos or who may not be juggalos but still have to perform and are part of the juggalo scene that basically try to remake this album. And it's because, like, even though he's talking shit about, you know, juggalos and ICP on some of these tracks, if you want to get into the wicked shit, as they call it, this is one of the top dudes, you know, from that scene, too, the Detroit horrorcore scene, the Detroit underground hip-hop scene, that just, you know, displays it the best possible way. So, I mean, there's juggalos today that are just like, yeah, I didn't like it then, but, I mean, I love Stan.
Right. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Can't deny. I think that's one of the reasons I like Marshall Mathers, the Marshall Mathers track, is with all the dumb disses he did on the album. When he went after them, I was like, yo, he means that shit.
Oh, he was hurt. And do you guys know the origin of it?
Tell us.
So they were part of all of them. ICP, Twisted, D12, Royce, M. They're all part of, even Kid Rock, were all part of a small circle in Detroit, and they were all performed at this place called St. Andrew's Hall. And M, apparently, allegedly, he made a flyer for either Slim Shady LP or Infinite album that was saying they had like a list of special guests. And I guess not everybody was confirmed, and ICP were on there. So they saw the flyer, and M handed it out to them at like some event they were at, and they saw their name on it, and they were like, what's this about? You saying we're going to be there? We ain't even heard anything about this. And he was like, no, I'm saying y'all might pull through or something like that. And I think they did something like balled it up and threw it at him in his face or something. And so ever since then, it's been a bit rowdy between them. But, I mean, it's good now. They don't have any problems.
I was going to say, do they still have issues? Like, M sees them out in the street. There might be words.
No, he might have to. As a matter of fact, I go as far as saying there should have been a ICP and Eminem track at this point. I guess they're not really on his radar at this point anymore.
Well, you know he's still making music, so it could happen when he drops another album this year that nobody wants. Did I say that out loud? Damn.
Oh, damn.
I don't want it.
Don't even get me started.
But we're here to talk about the Marshall Mathers LP, so.
Right.
And you cut it right there.
And your intro music.
You know the wild shit? What if he just leaves it like this? That'd be actually killer.
It don't matter. It's your show, EG. Do what you want, sir.
I got some ideas.
I'm back. Well, I never left, but we're back. We're back with episode 71 of the world's greatest, number one greatest concert review podcast in the world, or whatever I used to say, because I haven't done this intro in a damn minute. But yeah, this is episode 71 of Catch the Show. What is up, show catchers? Have you been keeping up with any of the shows? I've been any of the episodes from the other show, and this show, whatever, it doesn't matter. Welcome. Yeah, still no concerts to review. Because, you know, that virus thing. But we do have something to talk about, though, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, though. Let me touch on the typical things, as I normally do, such as making sure that you guys are still following me, or that you do follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Catcher of Shows. It's that simple. I've been saying it for God knows how long at this point. But while you do that too, make sure you are following the crew that I am a part of, that, you know, this podcast would not exist to be, you know, without, which is Hyphen Podcast Group, at Hyphen Podcast Group on Twitter and Instagram. And make sure you visit our site, www.com-podcastgroup.com, where you will find all the episodes to this show and my other show, and all the shows that make up the Hyphen Podcast Group, especially the ones of our two guests for this evening. So this is a very special episode, that I've been sitting on for a minute, because, these will came out weeks ago, but, you know, I had schedules, things set up, and then, you know, my past two episodes that I've just recently done, were a little more relevant to what was going on at the time, not necessarily in the world, but just things going on and pertaining to that shows and its content and whatnot. So, you know, I did end up doing two episodes in one week instead of trying to do another episode the following week, which would basically have been like three episodes within one week, really. I just said, let me let those two episodes breathe for, you know, the 2 weeks, two episodes that came out. So, yeah, that's basically what I did. Instead of trying to burn myself out, you know, with episodes and recording and all that shit. So, yeah. But, big but. This episode is brought to you by the man behind Hyphen Podcast Group, Mr. Kellen B. Hyphen Conley. He hit me up one day, not too long after the 20th anniversary of the Marshall Mathers LP, which is what we are here to talk about, because that's what the episode's titled. But Yeah. That the 20th anniversary of the album was May 23rd, and it wasn't too long afterwards. It wasn't too long after me and Marcus did our episode about Tyler that Kelly hit me up, knowing me and him being Eminem fans, and Eminem being one of my favorite rappers of all time, and us having very strong opinions of him and his work, that we would do, you know, maybe we should do an episode, or at least have a conversation, a recorded conversation, about this quintessential album of his career. And, yeah, so I was definitely down with that, because this is one of my favorite albums of his. And, I can't remember exactly how Marcus came into the fold, but I mean, Marcus has been on the show. Marcus Show, Matt Love Robinson, of course, has been on the show countless times. Anytime I'm talking about an artist, or, you know, to talk about an artist, or, you know, an album per se, and it makes sense, right? I mean, to have him on again to talk about this one. So, you know, we got together to have a very in-depth conversation about Eminem, and a very pivotal, very important record in his catalog that I would say helped define him as, hey, one of the best rappers out here, man. And yeah, so we talk about that. We talk about why that record is, you know, did that for him, and why is considered the classic that it is, and some of our favorite tracks off of it, and what makes it a favorite of ours, or what do we like about it, and what do we dislike about it, and critiques and critiquing some of the elements of the album that don't hold up as well today and are a little rough to get through, and, you know, and just sort of sharing our opinions full 360 of just our histories with this record and Mr. Marshall Mathers himself. It was a very fun conversation to have, and yeah, I'm not gonna dwell on too much on this intro, man. Don't want this to be too long, take up too much from the episode. All I will say lastly is make sure you follow Marcus and Kellen on, you know, their respective social medias, which I will have in the description of this show, along with links to their respective shows, Kellen's podcast, Hyphen Nation, which you should have already been listening to, and Marcus's show with Kat. We should do this again sometime. So, yeah, with that being said, man, let's get into the episode with our discussion about the 20th anniversary of of Eminem's Marshall Mathers LP.
You know, I just don't get it. Last year I was nobody. This year I'm selling records. Now everybody wants to come around like I owe them something. The fuck you want from me? $10 million? Fuck out of here.
You see, I'm just Marshall Mathers.
Marshall Mathers.
I'm just a regular guy. I don't know why all the fuss about me.
Fuss about me.
Nobody ever gave a fuck before. All they did was doubt me.
No, I don't know how to say it.
Do your show intro, man.
All right. You know, I'm just going to leave this in. Y'all already heard me fuck it up. So, this is episode 71. I think it'll be 72. Yeah, 71. I'm all over the place. Because, God, I'm off my A game right now. But yes, episode 71 of Catch the Show. I'm here with, I don't even have anything too grand to say about y'all other than I would not be doing this podcast shit if it wasn't for these two fine gentlemen. the I would say president and vice president of hyphen podcast group, Marcus Scholl and Matt Love Robinson.
He's the president.
Oh no! I'm just a consigliere.
Kellen is the to figure it out. I'm not even gonna get in the middle of that argument. But Mr. Marcus Scholl, Matt Love Robinson, and Kellen hyphen Connolly, B hyphen to those who know.
Yeah, what up, Dell? Kellen's Michael. I'm Tom Hagen.
Nah, man, you're the podcast MVP right now, man. You got your own show. You popped up on Alapal. You just did Catch the Show. Like, yeah, you've been on everybody's pod, man. You're gonna show up on a Melisette episode for I know it.
I mean, I think my voice is kind of too ugly for that, but I appreciate the love nonetheless.
It's a monster book, so why not?
Jesus.
I'll put in a good word for you.
Get this nigga out of here, Eric. Get this nigga out of here.
Dang. Big dog, you can't treat me like that.
It's already taking a bad turn so far.
Yeah. Well, this episode's fitting to be pretty aggressive if because of the content, you know, so
very,
why
very
not?
Aggressive. Yes, this episode, we will be talking about an album that, as of this recording, came out 5 days ago, dropped 5 days ago, 20 years ago, and that is the Marshall Mathers LP, the third studio album by a little rapper by the name of Eminem. Guys,
look at you giving Infinite credit. That's what's up.
Oh, Infinite deserves credit, okay? Infinite had bars. Let's not just...
Infinite did have bars. I'm just saying that people will call it his second studio album. You know, that's all I'm saying.
No,
I respect
third.
It.
It's his yes, third. And I would wish he would acknowledge it just a little bit. I mean, you don't need to... I mean, it's not that great, but, you know, it's not a bad album. It's not a bad album.
There's people out there who still swear it's his best work to this day. Like, they try to put it up there with, like, Reasonable. And...
as someone who I think I can comfortably say I've probably listened to Infinite more than you guys times three, it's solid. It's not. It's definitely not Reasonable Doubt, like, in any way. But, like, he has a couple of times where he's doing some wordplay on it. So, it wasn't bad enough that, you know, he should ice himself, but it was okay.
I agree. Yeah, it's I think the first time I ever listened to it, it was just basically like, okay, this was him before he found Eminem, basically.
And Slim Shady.
Yeah, and Shady, before he found Slim Shady more so. So I dig hearing the influences, because you can definitely hear like that Redman influence. Or at least that, like, Death Squad influence.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, this idea came from basically you guys. You guys, I wish I would have thought of it. You know, me being the one of the last few people to put Eminem in their top five, which he's in my sixth now because of that last album. But we'll get to that maybe some other time or later.
Yeah, right.
That's a whole different conversation.
A whole different conversation.
That's a lot of conversation, man.
We're
going to try not to bash Marshall, man. We're going to try not to bash. Well, I mean, if we got to bash him about this album.
Are we going to try not to?
Okay, it's hard not to talk about Eminem without bashing him. That's a good point. So we're here to talk about the 20th anniversary, and whatever happens, happens. Let's put it like that.
That's the best way to go about it. That's the best way.
So,
to go about it.
I'm gonna steal the ball for a second here, AG.
Oh,
when was the first time? When was the first time you heard the Marshall Mathers LP? Like, do you remember your first experience with the album?
Yes. My first experience with the album was around the time the album came out, and that was just basically. I want to say maybe that could have been around the time. I don't know when exactly we met Kellen, but I definitely remember.
It was before we met. It was before we met, because the album came out in 2000, and I didn't meet the Morgantown until 2005 or 2003. And we okay. probably didn't meet. I didn't meet your dad. It's 05, so it was probably like 06 or so when we probably met.
Okay.
Just a guess.
I definitely remember riding around Morgantown and hearing Marshall Mathers and Kill You in the car. Like, Jesus, I just have vivid memories of that.
And how older were you again at that time, EG?
I had to be between 8 or 9 years old.
Ooh. Yeah, talk about that. You're an 8 or 9 year old hearing. I mean, not to say you haven't heard bad words at your point, because you've always been a music head, but to hear an album like Marshall Mathers for the first time at that age, that's something me and Marcus ain't got. So go ahead.
Yeah. I can't remember my impression of it. I just know I liked it. Because those specific songs are very nostalgic to me because of those memories. So, yeah, I remember this era. This is probably one of the earliest hip hop eras for me. I remember. I remember some of the '90s, but I was like really young then. But like, this era for me is probably one of my earliest memories of, like, I can kind of remember when this thing dropped, or where I was when I first saw this and that. So that's kind of where this album has a special place for me. It's just like when we talk hip hop, this is one of those records that, you know, a lot of people can say, I remember where I was when this dropped or when this happened. You know, this is one of those for me. And yeah, I was like single digits age, man. I was like 8 or 9. It's crazy thinking back on that and stuff. But yeah, I remember going to CD stores before I could ever actually buy a CD myself. That this was one of the CDs, along with like Slipknot and Korn and specific commons like Water for Chocolate. I would see.
Oh, classic.
Which is one of my favorite albums. We'll talk about that one day. But those were the album covers. I would see. Or was it B?
B came out. Water for Chocolate came out in 2000. So it's in the same year as Marshall Mathers.
Yeah, okay. Like Water for Chocolate.
I was going to say that just turned 20 a while ago.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cliffhanger. But I just remember seeing those album covers when I would go to like the CD store and just, it was like a Sam Goody, and just go through the aisles, just, you know, just looking at stuff, just being fascinated by music. So yeah, this era I remember just through the eyes of a child.
So
how about
so
you
with,
guys?
Yeah, I was gonna say with that, Marcus, I want to pass it to you, because I was about 17. Yeah, I was about 17 when I first heard this album. So you're like right on middle school age, your high school age, man. So
damn, you were 17. God damn.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Marshall Mathers, like LP, Slim Shady LP. Like, this is a time of you know, of me being in middle school, but transitioning into high school. So my freshman year was that fall of 2000. So I, you know, Eminem was definitely someone who was a major presence in my middle school. I still regret not going to the Up in Smoke concert when they came to
DC. I was hoping you'd say you went. Yes. I was hoping you'd say you went.
I still regret not going to that.
I watched that DVD thousands of times growing up.
Yeah, man, like, that was like some real Apex type shit, man. But yeah, man, so, you know, this album, you know, was something that, it's one that he asked, you know, EG, how he kind of perceived the album. I remember the very early sets of me listening to the album. I felt like I remember feeling like it's definitely like a lot of rage, but it was so popular and I was kind of so young. I didn't really fully process the album, I don't think. I think initially, you know, he had songs, you know, dropping the F word, killing people, not giving a fuck, like all that type of stuff. He kind of being that young, you only kind of perceive on the surface level. But it took, you know, many, many moons getting removed from it to kind of truly grasp the album. Because Eminem was such a pop figure that, you know, he was just omnipresent. Like, he was just always around, like, a TRL, like, one of... He wasn't necessarily like number one on BET, but he was definitely number one during the TRL era. And I was a kid. I was always more into TRL than like 106 and Park, because, you know, obviously the music is kind of more varied, especially for the pop side on TRL. But yeah, man, Eminem was fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
I feel the same way because, like, of course, Slim Shady came out in 99, and that's when he kind of, I mean, My Name Is dropped, and he got really popular, and he broke through, essentially, with the album, everything. And I just didn't know how to take him, like, initially, because at that time, music wasn't quite readily available, especially not as easy as it is now. So, like, I couldn't just get a copy of Slim Shady, like, my dad and my mom would watch me like super close. So had to have the homies like copy me tapes and stuff. And then I'd have to hide them shits just to listen to these things.
Nice.
So yeah. So Slim Shady was cool. But when I got that copy of Marshall Mathers and I got the joint like maybe a few weeks after it came out, and this is hot on the heels of Chronic 2001, 2001 Dr. Dre. And then this album comes out and I just listened to it, and as much as I hated how much the real Slim Shady was getting played on everything, on the TRLs and the 106 and Parks when it started, I respected it. And I realized that this white boy who was not Vanilla Ice, who was our only exposure to hip hop as far on a mainstream level, as far as a white rapper goes, it seemed like that even though he had these pop hits, like he was seriously coming with some stuff, but I didn't quite comprehend the lyricism parts as much as I was just feeling like he was just saying things to get attention at the time, because he was going after pop acts. I mean, he was doing these corny songs that I felt was corny as a 17-year-old. I didn't quite get the whole grasp of what the album was until I got to the title track, and once I got to Marshall Mathers, I was like, that's when it all clicked for me about what Eminem was as an artist, at least as I comprehended it then, and then what this whole album persona was about. So it was quite the watershed moment for me to see this dude come in and essentially start to Elvis the genre, which had never happened before.
Yeah.
Which is funny. It's funny looking back on it, because like, yeah, I think my perspective of it was I just kind of looked at him as silly, like trying to think of like a kid's eyes, because I don't think I was like, even on a white rapper aspect, like I think I knew Vanilla Ice at that time just for, you know, Ice Ice Baby. I don't think I was too into Beastie Boys yet, so, but I was definitely a TRL kid. I was definitely all about the boy bands and the Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera's and all that. Like, whoever they were saying was the best back then, I was like, okay, they're the best. And so then this white dude comes out of nowhere with bleached blonde hair, rapping, dressing up like Marilyn Manson, and making and like talking shit about all these artists I know about and rapping. And it's just like, I guess, kind of mesmerizing in a way, or just like, out of nowhere. It's just a crazy thing. So, like, I don't think I took him seriously until...
Right.
Yeah, until, like, later on. Maybe with this album. Because I think the Stan video kind of creeped me out, and I started to look at him a little differently. Because I think that was the first time his lyrics actually... I got the story, you know, of Stan.
I think Eminem is probably the last rapper that, if you talk about his career, like, you have to talk about his music videos. Like, that was the era when music videos definitely still mattered. And the funny thing is, I was watching the Role Model video earlier, the Uncensored one, and I completely forgot how fucking wild that video was. And I think even going to that point of not taking him seriously, I mean, yeah, like, you can kind of talk about the fact that he was a white guy rapping or whatever, but there's kind of things beyond that that you can kind of look at and kind of think, you know, who what kind of guy is this? Like, in his rap videos, he has a cartoon character of himself. Like, he's dressing like Tom Green and saying, "My bum is on your lips, my bum is on your lips." Like,
yeah, right. Well, that's what, like, I meant by, like, not taking them seriously. It wasn't so much that it was race, because race wasn't, you know, racial things weren't really too much of a something that I was really taking into account yet that young. But just really, like, dressing up like characters, and, you know, how the humor of his videos was more so what I meant. Like, whereas when I listened to Kill You, looking back then, I wasn't thinking of, like, oh, he's actually rapping about murder, like, until later on.
Yeah, like, the, you know, the domestic violence aspect of Eminem, it doesn't really register with a lot of, you know, 13, 14, 15-year-olds. So, yeah. So, it's like, you can't segregate that from Eminem. Like, that's kind of who he is. Like I was listening to Kim, you know, just a little while ago.
Yeah, and me too.
Like, how kind of stark that is, listening to 2020, like, It's remarkable, but not in the right way you want to be remarkable.
It might be the most fucked up track on this album.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, let's get right to the shits. Let's talk about Kim, man, because Kim wasn't the first time that he did this, you know, because on the Slim Shady LP, 97 Bonnie and Clyde. That's the right track, right? Yeah, 97 Bonnie and Clyde is when... Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the two of yeah. I mean, he killed Kim and had Haley with him the whole time. I mean, and to hear this track and the lyric as fuck it, I'm gonna say it. Back then, I loved the song Kim. Like, it wasn't something that y'all, I'm like, I gotta listen to Kim. I'm so filled with rage. Ah, oh, fuck women. No, I wasn't on that shit. But I liked the song in the scope of the album. I can't listen to Kim now. Kim is just too much for me. Got too many ladies in my life and everything. Like, I listened to it when I replayed Marshall Mathers LP and everything a few days ago. But, you know, I had a few drinks in me, so I was a little bit more ready for it. But Kim then was groundbreaking because nobody else is doing that on a record to that extreme. That was some freaking punk. Horrorcore, like hardcore stuff that you would actually hear on a metal album, maybe something like that, if they were able to even go that far back then. Like, nothing in rap approached that, and like, there's a lot of great, like, you could say there's Gravediggers, there's horrorcore rap, there's plenty of stuff that's come before then that they've had this stuff, but Eminem took it to the mainstream level with Kim, and he literally just tortured his soon-to-be again wife on this song and put it on his second album and just gave it to the world. Like, I'm sure, what are y'all's opinions on Kim in 2020 versus 2000?
Well, this song could never be made today, like, flat out. Like, like, it's just, and it's just unfathomable, you know. And Eminem's whole thing is, like, I remember, like, 5 years ago, he had, like, a lyric of, like, you know, I'm like, the enemy of every feminist. Like, bro, you're just the enemy of women, just flat out. Like it's, right. It's, like, in Kim, it's just kind of this, it's the prelude to, you know, 97 Bonnie and Clyde. And on one hand, you can kind of, you know, take the theatricality of it. But if you're listening to it now, it's kind of like, you know, all these signs of women talk about how they get abused in their homes. Eminem is flexing a lot of these signs. Like, he's flexing like a lot of angry tendencies, like violence, murder fantasies about, you know, her other partners, like outside of their relationship. It's just really not what you want. Like this whole album is just like a therapist's nightmare. like it's too much, man. It's too much.
That's a therapist who doesn't return a phone call when they're like, well, I need help, and they hear, I don't, this is like, nah, you know what? You're good. Just let Jesus deal with you.
So here's a fun fact about Kim. It was apparently the first song he recorded for this album. And apparently, I didn't know this, but him and Kim were together around this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were on and off, yeah.
Yeah, they had recently gotten married right before this.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, he quotes, he wanted to create a fucked up song, but... wait, let me hold on. Okay, he said, once the couple reconciled, Eminem recalls, I asked her to tell me what she thought of it. I remember my dumbass saying, I know this is a fucked up song, but it shows how much I care about you. To even think about you this much, to even put you on a song like this.
Jesus Christ.
So that's, he played this gross for her.
And so she said, I'm so flattered. Yes, please put this out to the millions of people who are your fans. Like, it's...
Yes, so...
Like, they're not still together today, are they?
No, they haven't been together since the pistol whipping incident in like 2000. He didn't pistol whip her. No, I think he pistol whipped. They were broken up and they were still like they were separated. They weren't divorced yet. And he caught her in the club with some dude. And I'm pretty sure he pistol whipped the dude. And that's why he's on probation, like when he signed 50 and everything. And that's why he had this line. He's like, still watch what you say to me, punk, because I'm off probation in less than 6 months. You know, so. And
oh,
then this,
my God.
And Jesus, he had this song on Eminem's show, too, Say Goodbye to Hollywood, where it was kind of about the incident where with the gun and the pistol whipping and everything. I think there's a pistol whipping. I know it was definitely a gun. So maybe it was just for a gun charge. Maybe there was no pistol whipping. I haven't looked in a long time, but he was definitely on probation for having a piece and confronting Kim in public and then getting arrested for it.
Jesus Christ, man.
And they got back together, like, I mean, eventually after this record they separated again, but they got back together or remarried like years later, like almost a few albums later, wasn't it? Because I remember reading that like on the
it wouldn't online. Surprise me. It's a classic, I hate to say it, it's a classic abusive relationship, man. And I'm glad. Yeah. I mean, they weren't good for each other at all. Absolutely not. Let's see. Two were married in 99, divorced in 01. They briefly remarried in 2006, filed a divorce in early April. There was rumors in 2010 they have reunited. And yeah, that's it. But wow. Dang, I did not know about the 2006 reconciliation or remarried. Yeah,
that's the one I read online because that's when I was like really like becoming an Eminem stan.
Wow. Dang, man. I mean, you can't talk about this album without talking about Eminem's issues all across the board. With as much as we've listened to rappers call women, and I'm just going to say a few of the words, bitches, sluts, hoes, all across the board. And we'd be like, yeah, hoes, all these niggas and all these hoes, and somebody here going, that was like a year before on the Chronic 2001. And we was fine with that, you know? But then when Eminem takes it and starts out with Kill You, come here, slut, you know? And it's jarring.
Yeah. And
I really liked one of my standout tracks from the album was Kill You as well. And I every now and then can play it, but it's one time and I got to move on. Because as much as I love what he did lyrically and musically with that song is just completely disgusting to me now. And I hate myself for wanting to listen to it still. And it's kind of like we can even just jump to this one too. Like, all the F words he said on this album and all the F words he continues to use today, like back then, it didn't bother me.
He still uses the F word in his raps today.
I'm pretty sure Music to Be Murdered By had a couple in there, didn't they?
I don't remember him, but I definitely remember on Kamikaze he used it once, and they bleeped it out.
If it wasn't on, it must have been either Revival or Marshall Mathers LP2. He still was saying it, and he got in trouble, and he had to apologize for it. They probably did bleep it out on later albums. I feel like he probably said it on Music to Be Murdered By, but I've listened to that album once, so I couldn't even tell you for sure. But like, he literally was using this word at the way people change their underwear, and I didn't think nothing of it 20 years ago. And I think about it now, and it's just again.
I mean, that the context of Eminem is like you can't escape it. Like, there's albums of there's pieces of music and movies and art that even if you remove the context of it, the art still lasts. Like, if you never knew who Sean Carter was before his life or after his life when Reasonable Doubt dropped, if you just listen to Reasonable Doubt front to back, you just have the music. You don't need his stories of selling heroin in Virginia. You don't need him shopping deals and not getting anything and starting Rockefeller Records. Like, you don't need any of that. You just need the music. Eminem's career, particularly for this album, if you remove the context away from his music, it's like really hard to digest this music. Like, for me personally, like, I haven't listened to Marshall Mathers LP front to back in at least 5 to 10 years. Like, it's been that I haven't listened to this album like that in forever. So, and if you, the first 7 songs of this album are really about him reacting to the fame that he's gotten, reacting to his mother being a disappointment to him, him not taking responsibility for anything he did on the Slim Shady LP or his music videos, or him just really not giving a shit about his effect on the masses. Right. So if you take the context, if you just listen to this album, you don't know who Eminem is at all, like, you don't know anything about his history at all, you're kind of like, yo, he's really angry at people, at him. He's basically just reacting off anger. And so whether it's reacting for anger from the breakup with Kim or his mom or his dad not being there or him not wanting to take responsibility for his fans or, you know, the press, like, all that's in this album. So, you know, the context of Eminem, like, you have to go back to that well in, like, the late 90s and early 2000s to talk about Eminem.
Yeah.
Right. And I listened to the album like a few hours ago for like not the first time in a while, because I think I listened to it like maybe last year at some point. I mean, I've heard it enough, but so I was listening to the record in full for the episode a couple hours ago. And if you were to say there was an overarching theme or a concept to this album, it would be like, I agree with everything you said, Marcus, but I would also say, like, kind of self-aware of, like, this is an album of just fucked up stuff. Because even with the skits of, like, Paul and the Steve Berman skit, where they're just, you know, they're saying, this record's just too much, Eminem, we can't put this out. Like, stuff like, skits like that too, and then, of course, being followed up with the songs that we're talking about, it feels like that's kind of the idea of this whole record is just him trying to be controversial, or just either trying to be controversial or just having zero fucks with this. Because even going back to the F word topic, there's a quote I found when I was going through, like, behind this album, where he says, regarding them, he says, people got all up in arms about it began using the F word more frequently when people got all up in arms about it just to piss them off worse. But added, I think it's hard for some people to understand that for me, the F word has nothing to do with sexual preference. I meant something more like assholes or dickheads.
Okay.
So, take that line as you will. I don't know the context of it or the time of it, but I mean, right there, he's straight up saying, like, this is a record to piss people off for the most part.
But that's still him just kind of not taking responsibility for his actions. Like,
oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, he obviously knows him saying, well, when I say, you know, fag, I don't, you know, mean the fake gay people, but it does. And so you keep saying it to egg them on with sort of no kind of artistic integrity behind it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it's the same way, he brings up, sorry to cut you off, it's the same way he brings up, you know, other topics throughout this album that is just like, why would you say that? You know, along those lines. So it's like you're saying, like, he knows what he's doing. You know, it's just, I don't know. We could go on the whole thing about 90s rappers saying shit that they know they shouldn't have said and then having a lame excuse for why they said it. Like, throw your guns in the air. Not about positivity. Not about uplifting the youth. Sorry, stick fingers. It's not.
Oh, man. Yeah, so let's say something nice about the album, I guess. I feel like we've just jumped right in to slaughtering this album.
Bitch, please.
I would actually have to say that. I don't think that's as good as Bitch, Please One.
I think the beat's better. I enjoy the Bitch, Please Two beat better than the first one, personally. It's a little bit more up-tempo for it.
Yeah, I agree.
And fun fact, Bitch Please 2 was one of the first songs ever downloaded off the Napster. That bitch took like 16 hours, I swear to God.
Napster, wow.
Shout out to Napster, man.
For me, for Eminem, like, I think Eminem, well, not even think, like, I know, Eminem was the first rapper of the file sharing era that I became like a fan of. So I was always more of a Slim Shady LP guy, more than a Marshall Mathers LP guy. But even when he was like, I'm tired of rappers who ain't bringing out the skill as me, saying it wasn't feeling me when my body is ill as me. Like, I remember getting no one's iller than me, and like all these underground like D12 songs that, you know, people kind of just put on the internet to find, like all those like Invasion mixtapes and like all those disses he had for like Ja Rule and all that shit. Like I was really big into Eminem, and I guess kind of the reason that, you know, I kind of got out of him is because I kind of transitioned to other rappers, but then I never went, when I would go back to him and his music, at that point, it kind of wasn't as fulfilling as in the moment. So, like, even though his album is mega violent and, you know, it's very disparaging against a lot of different people, like, when you're kind of that young, like, I guess we're kind of all kind of reiterating, like, you kind of don't really understand the magnitude of how negative he is because you're a fan of it. But then when you kind of step back and kind of evaluate it for what it is, like, for me, like I said, like from that era of 96, even Infinite, which back then it was still like album you had to get real media files, you had to convert it to MP3. Like I still remember putting people on to the fact that Eminem had an album before the Slim Shady LP. Like, even the Slim Shady EP, like, that was something that wasn't really like dispersed or whatever. But again, it's like that Eminem's music from 96 to, I would say, about 2002, 2003, like, that block of music in that time period for me was, like, some of my favorite rap music. Like, I was a big Eminem fan at that time. So, I mean, to say something positive about the album, like I said, like, during that moment, like, Eminem was pop culture. Like, the way Kanye West is pop culture now, Eminem was that before Kanye.
I agree.
I'm kind of with you there, Marcus, because I do want to say that my peak Eminem experience, if my apex mountain for Eminem, would probably be 8 Mile soundtrack, Eminem Show, and then a lot of the mixtape stuff that he did leading up to Encore. Encore got really trashy real fast.
That's where I got off. Moments,
Yep, it had some moments. But I got to say, Eminem Show is my favorite Eminem album, personally. I think it gives you a little bit of everything, and it's a little bit more mature for Marshall compared to the first two albums, studio albums, major label albums, not trying to leave Eminem out. So Eminem Show is my favorite. So that's my peak era, too. And it actually, I was really disappointed by Encore. And then when the hiatus came, I was really disappointed by that. And then when he came back with Relapse, and he was doing the accent, and then he was going back to the ultraviolent lyrics, I don't know what it was. It was a different me, a different time period. I was kind of there for it, despite the accents. I'm a Relapse apologizer. But then he started going into the Eminem that he's now formed. He's become now, because, of course, he did Recovery, and then he had what was the album he did after Recovery?
One of y'all. Eminem, Marshall Mathers LP 2, actually.
Oh, did he go with Marshall Mathers? Okay, actually, I like Marshall Mathers LP 2. Recovery was cool. I like Relapse way more than I should. It's been at least 11 years since I've listened to Relapse, though. Ooh. So it's probably not the same for me. I need to go back and revisit to see if I feel the same way I do about Marshall Mathers.
I got you back in a little bit, Kellen.
All right, cool. So yeah, the growth was evident by the time we got to the early 2000s, but this album was definitely somebody still trying to find his voice, and he just had the biggest machine behind him pushing him to do whatever he wanted. And one of the things that really came off well, despite Marcus saying that he wasn't taking responsibility for himself in the media and with fans and things like that, The Way I Am, I still think is an incredible song. And that is just based purely from an MC's standpoint of the way he did that flow through that song and wrote that freaking nobody else was doing that on a mainstream level like M did in 2000.
The video too.
And that's the first
beat he actually produced solo for any of his projects.
Is it? See, I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize that until like a couple of days ago.
Today for me, I've just realized that.
But no, like the video, think about the era in the videos. I keep going back to it, but no one's putting a single like that out now. Like, even Stan is a storytelling ass song. Like, and that was like number one on TRL. Like, that's the power that Eminem had. Like, and so I agree. That's actually, even if you listen to the lyrics of the music, like, even though I think artists, it's kind of like this yin and yang thing of like, there's a certain point where at some point artists can't take responsibility for everyone else. Like, I put the art out, and if you interpret it in that way, I can't control that. And so that song, even though it is technically a great song, I think even lyrically, like him actually bringing up, you know, points of how, you know, there's school shootings, but you blame them on Marilyn Manson, but you're not looking at the fact that, you know, why aren't these parents taking care of their kids better? So, I mean, Eminem, I think there's times when he doesn't take responsibility, but at the same time, I do think that is actually a song where he does have points that are made as far as like, I may not take responsibility for this, but why aren't you taking responsibility for your part of it also?
Right. And I think that's the thing about this album that makes it such, I can say a classic, is that aside from all the controversial and now cringy lyrics and you know, shock humor or horrorcore nature on throughout this album, there are some like really defining lyrical songs that like you said, Marcus, that you really wouldn't see any artist putting out and becoming a hit today, like Stan and The Way I Am, and even The Real Slim Shady, where he's like making fun and calling out like some at the time pop culture, you know, celebrities. I mean, Tom Green and the whole Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson domestic abuse thing, and you know, just there's just a lot. There's a few things on here that are like very I don't know if the word remarkable is what I want to say, but just sort of, you know, we're not going to see something like that happen again today. Where,
yeah,
you know, it happened with him, and it definitely played a part in shooting him off into being one of the biggest stars of the you know, the early millennium.
Yeah.
Despite all the controversy.
Do y'all have any deeper album cuts that y'all really like on this LP that y'all want to talk about? Because I'm just looking through the track list and I'm just curious to see what y'all got. Because I threw Marshall Mathers out there. It's the title track, so I don't know how deep that gets, but it wasn't a single. So does anybody have like maybe a soft spot for Under the Influence or Criminal or anything like that?
I was always big on Remember Me, but
I was just about to say that.
Like, because I feel like that's the first. That's the first like regular non-burden rap song on that album. And then RBX and Sticky Fingers just doing mayhem on that song. And then Eminem coming through. I promise the fucking critics I wouldn't say fucking for 6 minutes. For my baby's mom, bitch made me an angry blonde, so I made me a song, killed him for Haley on, like all that shit. Like him just basically going through like him, like that's at his apex of being like a technical wizard. So that I always had a soft spot for that song.
I would say the same thing, especially for like, I don't know if I always noticed it, but today listening to it, man, just the transition from that last "Remember Me" into "They Call Me Slim Shady."
That's a nasty transition. I love that when I first heard that in high school, man. It's like, and it's like, boom, 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 boom.
Seamless. Boom, boom, seamless.
Boom, boom. That was a nasty transition. I hated Remember Me in high school. I'm not afraid. I was hoping y'all would say that just because I did not like it because I was a big Source reader at the time. And they were like, oh, Remember Me, it's got RBX and Sticky Fingers. It's one of the dope tracks off of Marshall Mathers. I listened to that show. I was like, this shit is trash. Why does everybody think this shit is so dope? And I mean, again, this is a 17-year-old me. And I was like, M's verse, dope. I didn't like RBX. I didn't like Sticky. I was like, they didn't do nothing for me. And then in future re-listens, as I got a little bit older and more understanding of things, I came to realize that Remember Me is truly dope. But I did not like that song. So I was always really disappointed in it because the Source built it up. And then I got to it and I was like, I don't hear it. But now I understand completely. Remember Me is dope. And that's an ill transition. So I'm back.
I will say RBX and Sticky Fingers, for like first time I listened, I think I was kind of a little thrown off, at least by RBX's flow.
It's his voice, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's the voice. It. Yeah. Yep.
But Sticky Fingers, man, come on, Sticky Fingers on that track.
I didn't know, man. I didn't know. Like, I knew Onyx, man, but I didn't appreciate it. Like, I came to appreciate a few years down the road. That's all. That's all it was. Young and dumb, man.
One track for me that I've definitely always been on and off about is Amityville. And I think most of it had to do with Bazaar.
Yeah. Yeah, I never fuck with Amityville. I was never on Amityville. Yeah.
That was my first time hearing Bazaar, I believe. I hadn't heard him at all until that track on that album.
Here's the thing about Bazaar that I've come to over the years.
Here's the thing about Bazaar.
He's still on Drake Champs, like shitting on everybody, by the way, just a few months ago.
Oh, yeah, I heard that one. Here's a Bazaar hot take for everyone out there, listeners.
You know, me and Marcus love a good hot take.
Well, here comes one. I've grown to appreciate Bazaar. Yeah. Staying on brand, because I mean, the first time you hear Bazaar, you immediately are going to think, why is this dude on this track with Eminem? This guy sounds like he can't rap, you know. And then you hear him again a few tracks later on Under the Influence. So, you know, but over time, and like, I guess, I don't know, I guess maybe you just, he's so consistent with that offbeat, like almost purposefully bad kind of flow and style, and just saying the most like messed up stuff. Like almost, I mean, the same thing we've been saying about him, we could say just as much about Bizarre. If you listen to Bizarre's solo stuff,
I guess he takes. I guess he wants to take credit for encouraging Eminem to rap in this way, but.
Well, I mean, that, and I also, like, we could also talk about just, like, how their whole Detroit hip-hop scene, like, at least from theirs, with the hip-hop store and whatnot, like, that was kind of, shock was kind of a thing, especially with M. I think one of his influences is Esham, who was also a big influence for, like, Insane Clown Posse and a lot of Detroit horrorcore.
He used to have those back of the source ads. I remember him.
Yep, Esham the Unholy. First young black rapper to be talking about Satan and all that stuff. Had a rap group called Nadas, which is Satan backwards.
Hilarious, goddamn.
Yeah.
He did. Like he totally did.
It's like an acronym for, like, you know, one of them 90s acronyms, like Niggas Against Time and Space or something like that. Like, it's something like
Niggas Against Time and Space. That sounds so on brand, though.
Nats.
Yeah, I think.
That is.
I actually believe that's what it is. It's like, it's the internet for niggas. But yeah, Bizarre and them, they come from that whole background. And like, over time, I've just sort of, like, understanding that, and actually haven't listened to Bizarre's first EP, which isn't bad. I like it, Attack of the Weirdos. Like, it's that track Amityville is kind of on and off for me. Like, over time, I don't know, the first time I heard it, I was just, why?
His verse is so wild, yo.
Bizarre's verse?
Yeah, Bizarre's verse.
I mean, we're talking about Eminem and Bizarre same track. We could go either one, but
basically.
but then he kind of redeemed himself on a freaking Under the Influence, man. I mean, it was still weird, but it was fun. And I mean, that has one of the craziest like hooks on it that. Like, one of the songs that you just love to sing, especially when you're a young kid, it's like, if you don't like that shit. That was not when I wrote this. Yeah. That was fun to sing when I was 19, boy. It was like, yeah.
That was fun to sing when I was 10.
Hilarious.
Lord, shut up, EG. Go to bed. Go read your Bible verses. My favorite Bizarre moment of all time, because I do not know his catalog as well as you do, EG, is still.
I never said I knew his catalog that well.
Okay, well, you've listened to his music.
You've listened
to, like, my effort to listen to something outside of D12 and Eminem. My favorite.
If you listen to three Bizarre songs, you listen to the catalog, basically.
Pretty much. Guilty. My favorite moment still is Bizarre on My Band. He's my favorite part of that whole song, man. I'm sorry. In 2004. It is what it is. He definitely took it to the next level, and he's great again in another great music video. Those D12 videos were wild, man. I wouldn't like fight music if it wasn't for that music video. So,
oh, yeah.
There it
is.
Oh, shout out to Shit on You. I was a big Shit on You fan.
Oh,
I used to love Shit on You.
You know, the first time I saw the clip for that was off a file sharing site, and it was like D12, I'll Shit on You. And when somebody downloaded it, we were like, oh, it's a music video with Eminem in it. And this is like 2001. And I was like, yo, that's really dope, man. This D12, that was really cool. Yeah, I totally remember that.
Those tracks and Purple Pills, like, yeah, I still ride for D12 to this day. I even go as far as saying you could, you know, rest in peace to Proof, but you can still do D12 if you just get Royce on par. Just get Royce on par, man.
I mean, Royce he doesn't have the same kind of flow that D12 had. Like,
oh, he would usually be the best in the group right off back, but
that's probably why I don't want him.
No, it's fair enough.
Yeah, last I checked, Eminem doesn't want to do any more D12 records, and some people are mad at him, some others are not. I want to send a shout out to Denon Porter, though, man, because he dropped this dope EP a few years ago that I really liked, and I wish he would put out more stuff on his own, stuff in my backpack. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, he is. I was really hoping we get a full length from him, but back to Marshall Mathers LP. Other elephant in the room we got to talk about. We've touched on it here and there, but the man got this word in the Webster's Dictionary, the Oxford Dictionary, and now it's literally known that some people like to stand for certain things. Like I used to stand for, fuck it, I still stand for Drake. I can't lie. I can't help it as much as...
Hold on, did you listen to the new project? What'd you think?
Yeah.
Real quick, what'd you think?
Better than what Scorpion was, and on par with Views. I thought it started lacking about midway through, but it was a really strong start, I felt like, and I liked a lot of it. I enjoyed it, and I've went back to it a few times to re-listen to it.
So for someone like me, Kellen, who is now at the point where it's like, if it's not an official Drake album, after hearing every Drake project up to this point, if it's not an official Drake album, I don't want to hear. Would I enjoy any of it, or should I just wait till the 7th album?
Well, hold on, Kellen, before you answer that, every Drake project is an album. This is an album. No matter if he says this is not an album, it's an album. More Life is an album. It's not that good, but it's an album.
Yeah. Right. You're right. But I mean, if we were to go based off of what Mr. Graham has said.
Is it
worth the listen, or should I just wait till
it is? It's worth.
Am I missing anything?
I'm going to say it's definitely worth the listen. The first, all the way through, man, you know, honestly, man, all the way through track 6, the joints of Future. Marcus, I'm coming around on Future too. I might have to start digging to that catalog.
Start with 56 Nights and go from there.
I might have to, man. I'm starting to finally get it. Yo, the first 6 tracks, I fuck with all of that. If you don't fuck with Tootsie, I get it. But you know me, I'm all about that corny Drake feel.
I was going to say, so Desires, Future has a better version of Desires is what's on this project. Future has basically a version of Desires that's basically like Future featuring Drake. So if you can find that, I may send it to you. You'll like
it. Yeah, it wasn't on Future's album, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Yes. If you think about it, send that joint over to me. I'd like to hear that. You should definitely listen to it all the way through, I think. But I really fuck with the first half really heavy. Stop denying yourself, Aubrey, man. Don't do that to yourself. You got to stand for him. for your Aubrey. Okay, well, I do.
I'll let you do that for me.
Okay, no problem. Marcus, what were your thoughts on Stan and your recent re-listen to it? I know that's probably the Marshall Mathers track you've probably heard the most over the years, because it's the one that still gets mainstream radio play every now and then.
I play way more Eminem than that, but... I think it actually holds up. Like my thoughts, I remember vividly my thoughts, like when I first heard the song, when I sat down and first listened to it, and then, you know, the spine tinglingness of Eminem realizing who Stan was, like that shit was like pretty jarring back then, and even now, like, and if you look at it like. And I didn't have this perspective then, but I kind of have it now. But, you know, he obviously created this song to, and, you know, it is a storytelling song or whatever. But at the same time, like, he is trying to create this image of, you know, there are people out there who take my music too seriously. And so when he says, like, I would, in his last verse, he's like, I would never do stuff like this. You know, what are you talking about? Fix things with your girlfriend or whatever. Like, he's kind of at least showing an example of there are people who are stands for our music. There are people that will bleach blonde their hair, that will get, you know, angry and violent. But what I'm just making is art, so please don't do what I don't do as I say. You know, take responsibility for your own life or whatever. Right. But I still think as a song itself, like, I still think the song is pretty pretty haunting.
It's a great reveal when he realizes that the letter is literally from Stan, and that the guy he's reading about is Stan. It's a great reveal in the song. This song is one of the reasons why I tend to feel comfortable leaning into storytelling when I do make music, because it's a great story from start to finish. I mean, you get the different characters. It's something that Eminem's went back to over the years, but there was never a time where he did it as well as this. And then to flip the Dido sample from a couple years earlier and turn that into a haunting melody, and then on the flip side of that, get that song exposure, and all of a sudden it's getting re-released like 2 years later and it's getting airplay. It's an incredible moment, and it being so early in the album, I really think it helped as far as he didn't really get great reviews. I still feel like as far as the album goes, the sequencing is really great. And I feel like to come with that right after Kill You, which is just an absolute like mind fuck, to come into that and this somber song about this kid who's obsessed with Eminem, and then Eminem finally sits down to write him back, and then turns out he did these horrible things, and then the connections made, it really shows you a lot of sides of the artist within the first three tracks of the album. I still think it's one of his probably top five songs in his catalog. And it's a masterwork that he did in just his second major label album.
Yeah, and you talk about the sequencing, that's why he has Stan, and then he has a skit with Paul Rosenberg, but then after that he has Who Knew. So yeah, he's setting up like dominoes. Like the Who Knew is like, who knew people would take this music this seriously? Which to his defense, like him being massively depressed after Infinite Bond to Slim Shady LP going triple platinum, like that's a supersonic kind of leap. So I can see from Eminem perspective how that would be super overwhelming.
For me,
this whole life changed, man. Go ahead, EG.
Yeah.
Oh no, I was just gonna say for me with Stan being the horrorcore historian such as myself, one of the things when you listen to music like that gets very tiring is hearing the same concept of what is horror to someone, which is very basic on like a 80s slasher film level, basically. So to hear, you know, when you look at Stan and you look at like this album being kind of looked at as a horrorcore record, songs like Stan are what really define someone attacking a certain topic like that for me, because it's a very creative story, especially for someone at Eminem at his level at this point, where he is one of the most popular artists at this time, to attack so I guess if Stan was a movie, what would we call it? What genre of movie would Stan fall into? Like a thriller, maybe?
I mean, I would consider it more horror. Like, it's basically a guy who's super obsessed. He's been shunned. It's basically Single White Female, but for a rapper.
Right.
So
yeah.
And so for him to make lyrically write something like that, you know, isn't it four verses? Three or four verses?
Yeah, it's four.
Four verses.
That really visually put the story in your head to like, yeah, we all know the video as well, but like, even if you haven't seen the video, I feel like you could see exactly what's going on with just how detailed every line is to the very end.
Yeah.
And just from the put a song like that, you know, aside from the horrorcore talking, but just like from a rap storytelling perspective, I think is another thing that like really shot him over above a lot of rappers at this time, or just a lot of artists. And then on top of that, just what the word, what we define the word standard today. Yeah, there's maybe not many fans that are just like the stand in the song. Thankfully, unfortunately, probably are some, but most of them get almost as bad. And the song title itself does has pretty much done well in defining, you know, extreme fans today.
Yeah.
And so yeah, just the whole thing with the song, I looking back on it and just where, you know, it stands today, it basically just holds up.
Yeah, it's a nice little piece of work, man. I like it a lot still to this day. So EJ, I know this is your show, but I kind of feel like we're coming into the home stretch here. So I'm going to go ahead and throw this out here and ask you, EG, where would Marshall Mathers LP rank in your Eminem totem pole, like top to bottom? You don't got to do the whole list, but just where would you land it? Is it at the top? Is it in the middle? Is it lower than what it used to be?
It's definitely at the top. I would say 1 point. It was like the number one for me. Okay, and thanks. I mean, when you listen to the album, you could clearly hear why it would be on a lot of people's number ones. But at the same time, you could hear why it may not be, because of course, you know, just the outdatedness of the shock, you know, of a lot of the lyrics.
Yeah.
And just, you know, that's another reason why it's kind of dropped over time. It's just like you guys were saying, like with the track Kim, like just, it's not something I would, you know, revisit back. Like, I need to hear this again. I love this song. You know, same thing for Criminal, right? Actually, too. Because Criminal, I remember Criminal used to be the beat and just the hook. I remember used to love growing up. And
Criminal rang off live up in Smoke when they did Criminal, man. And like, there's a couple other performances. Criminal is great live when he was still doing it live. It was just great. It was a great song.
That's why it used to be one of my favorites. But I guess I wasn't really listening to what he was saying. But, you know, like, again, going back to where I think, like, if this was a concept album, the concept of it would be like him giving zero F's about what people think and just really pushing it with this album. Because the album ends with Criminal, which, you know, even though I used to say, like, you know, well, he has the line, you know, in Real Slim Shady, if another man, you know, why another man can't elope, you know, that line. But then you get to Criminal and, you know, he has the line where he's like, you know, hate facts. The answer is yes. Which, sorry, I just said, I was just reading the quote right here, but
no, it's in context, right?
Right, but just, you know, it's definitely like, there's definitely some stuff on this record that I'm just like, it's very cringy. It's very, the shock is worn off, basically. You know, even if you were just like, ooh, it's edgy. You know, that's worn off to where it's kind of gone down my list. But I mean, the lyricism, you know, the sequencing, as you said, definitely the production for sure. And the nostalgia of it, just the memories that come along with this record. Keep it at least in my top three. I mean, this is definitely a record I would recommend to some people who aren't familiar with Eminem, want to get familiar with Eminem, or at least know why so many people call him the GOAT or have him in their top five. This is definitely a record I would say, yeah, give this a listen with at least a little warning for
right.
stuff. But I would just definitely say this is a must listen for sure. It's definitely like at least in my top three Eminem albums. And one of my favorite albums of all time, hip hop and just in all genres.
Okay. I agree with you about the shock wearing off, because one thing about this album is of course, it's very dated because a lot of the references that he makes, of course, are very in the moment, very 2000, very 1999 when he was recording it. And the thing with the shock value of the album, there's albums out there who, when the music came out, people were like, oh my God, that's so edgy. Like, that's too much. And then as the years go by, the artist gets respect for the album. Like, there's Prince music out there like that. There's Madonna music out there that's like that. And there's a name any artist that has these records that came out and people are like, oh my God, like, oh, I can't believe that. And then like 2 years later, people are like, oh, it might be the best album of their career. Like, it's almost in reverse for Marshall on this album, because of it being so dated and because of everything kind of, as much as he got away with that stuff now, with everything being less, with everything being closer to PC, and then especially with all the things that's happened with gay rights in the last 20 years, it just makes it super hard for the lyrics to stand up against just the time and place of the album. So I totally see your point there. Marcus, yeah. What do you think about Marshall Mathers?
For me, like, the replay factor is super high. Like, I can say this without hyperbole. I know I'll never listen to this album top to bottom again for the rest of my life. Like, I legit know I'll never want to revisit this album. maybe I'll, like, want to go to Bitch Please 2 or, Remember Me Maybe, but
I'm our never first verse on Amityville.
Oh, naturally. but that's kind of like, that's my thing with Eminem. Like, a lot of Eminem's music, just for me, it just not age well. I listen to Infinite because that is a lot of the boom bap, a lot of the Redman vibes, like a lot of just like his early super hungry shit. Like, on Infinite, he has a skit about Denon. I think that's Denon. He doesn't have 15 cents to ride the bus, nor Eminem has 15 cents to lend him to ride the bus. Like, that's broke. Like, that's poor. And yeah. So even like Slim Shady LP, where he has like If I Had $1 Million, like songs like that, where it's kind of like, I feel like that's more from an honest place for Eminem that really stick to me. But for me, I know, like, I probably don't listen to Marshall Mathers LP again. For me, I would say it's number three. Like, it's right above Eminem Show, but I have some Shady LP number one. I have Infinite 2. But whenever Encore dropped and it was bad, he was barfing on a record, I knew I had to get off the Eminem train, like, very, very quick. So, like, for me, like I said, Eminem really only occupies 96 to 2003 for me. So that's my order.
Gotcha. I personally like the album in the moment, even a few years later, especially with Eminem Show coming out. It kind of fell down for me. And then I like you, Marcus, I started listening to Slim Shady LP when I finally got a hold of that damn album. And I started listening to that. I was like, you know, I might like this better than Marshall Mathers, especially Just Don't Give a Fuck. That's my fucking jam. I don't care to this day. That's my song. But Eminem Show is just the polished version I've always wanted. So I'd put that up there. Marshall Mathers is probably somewhere in the top four or so, mostly because I've really liked Relapse, as violent and as bad as it was, the accents. I felt like it was a really good record somewhere hidden in there at that time. I really got to revisit it, but I'm still going to put Relapse in there. And then I like Marshall Mathers LP 2 a lot too. That was the last good album, I believe, and I'm sticking to that. So it's definitely... What?
Did you rank them? I feel like you said you like them, but you didn't. I don't know if you put them in any order.
Oh, okay. Let me give you an order. Eminem, yes, it goes Eminem Show, Slim Shady, and then it probably would go, probably I'm going to say Relapse, Marshall Mathers 2, Marshall Mathers.
Okay. Oh, so it's fifth?
It's fifth. Yeah. Woo! It's top five. I like the rapping and the lyrical flex, the lyrical ability he showed off of Marsh Mathers too, a little more. And I did like a lot of songs of Marsh Mathers too. I spent a lot of time with that album.
I gotta say, okay. So now that you said that, Kellen, because I didn't get my ranking exactly. So top five.
Oh, you said Marsh Mathers was number one.
No, I said it was number three.
Oh, you did?
I actually didn't. I said it would be in my top three. What I should have said was it would be my number
three. I thought he meant it was at the top two. So go ahead, AG.
No, this is my top three. It was my number one over time. But like I said, the it hasn't aged. Certain parts haven't aged as well as we said. And mm-hmm. that just kind of knocked it down a little bit. But, I would say my number one is probably Slim Shady LP, with Relapse being number two.
Okay.
I've listened to Relapse recently, even the what was it, the Refill edition that came out not too long after.
I wasn't too impressed with Relapse Refill. I think there was like maybe one track on there I messed with. I think it was like four new tracks. I think I only messed with one of them. I didn't think it added anything new to the album. But go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I listened to it because I hadn't listened to Relapse in a while, and I hadn't listened to the Refill edition, and it's on stream, and so I gave it a listen. I think okay. Relapse holds up a bit. If we could get over the accent thing, I think it holds up pretty well, man.
The accent never bothered me, man. Like besides We Made You, I was totally in, man. We Made You was a little annoying, but everything else I was really high on, and everybody thought I was nuts.
I would definitely say it's one of his best records. I don't care what anyone says. It's one of his best albums. And I think it's the last true Slim Shady record we've got mm-hmm. from him, and not this music to be murdered to by whatever shit. But, you know, that I would say Relapse number two, Slim Shady LP number one, Marsh Mathers LP
Marsh
number
Mathers three. Okay.
Eminem Show, number four. Even though I think going back to it, it could knock it down, could knock down this one. But Mushroom Mathers LP 2 is definitely my number five. Those are if somebody has to argue with me, as I've seen before, and I've been through before on Twitter, about Eminem not having the top five, I would throw those out at him.
Okay.
And also, so, I just want to say real quick, I messed up with what I was saying with Stan because I had a point and I lost it. And I don't think I'm going to get it back, but just so people know, I agree with everything you guys said. So, just that.
Hold on. So, none of y'all fuck with Infinite at all?
Infinite would maybe be my sixth or honorable mention. I need to go back and listen to it. It's just when I first listened to Infinite, it just sounded like, okay, this was where this is where you can hear the talent, but you can't hear him yet.
Like, it's been a minute. I don't think it's going to change, but I will go back and listen to Infinite and check it out and see if it, I thought it was fine. I thought it was cool. I thought he was doing a lot in that record that I was appreciative of, but I never really went back and listened to it again after I listened to it once. So I'm going to say, no, I don't fuck with Infinite, but that's only due to lack of listens.
I do like that it sounds like he was trying to be an East Coast rapper, a New York rapper.
Basically.
Which I dig. I dig that. But, it's probably like, it's not my top five of his. But I wouldn't knock it, though. I think there's definitely some good tracks on it.
So I'm guessing if it is in your top five, maybe, Marcus? Then
I said it's number two.
He says number two.
Yeah, he said it was number two.
But I say that with the asterisk. I say that I know as a body of work, it's not as good as Eminem Show or Marshall Mathers LP. But just for the amount of times I've gone back to it and wanted to go back to it, it's far exceeded those albums. So I haven't listened to Eminem Show. Ooh, I think it's been more than 10 years. I don't think I, you know, I'm not sure I listened to Eminem's show while I was in college.
Till like, I collapse, man. You gotta listen to Eminem's show.
Square Dance.
Square Dance. Come on, Dan. Come on, man. Square Dance.
Square Dance with me.
Yeah, man. You go back to Eminem's show, I'll go back to Infinite, and we'll meet up again. I'm sure at some point we'll see each other and we can discuss.
Hilarious.
So that's the Marshall Mathers LP 20th anniversary edition of Catch the Show. I'm gonna pass the ball back to EG and let him take us home because it is his pod and he was nice enough to let us invade it here.
Oh yeah, man. I appreciate you guys coming through and talking about one of my favorite records. One of my favorite records, 20 years. Damn.
It's insane, man.
Oh, before we go, shout out to Scary Movie. I listened to that for the first time in like a couple of years.
Yo, that holds up. That holds up. Bad Meets Evil holds up. Yeah, yo, Scary Movie is the record that made me a Royce fan.
Same. Yeah. Same for me. That put me on the Royce.
Shout out to the OG Renegade. See, man, the file sharing era was tight. File sharing had some gems. Shout out to OG Renegade, which is better than the Jay-Z Renegade.
It is, because Royce murdered that shit.
Yep.
And because M's verse is exactly the same, but Royce did just come in and he did his thing, man. Shout out to Explosive Part 2 with Royce on that joint. Anybody remember that one?
Ooh, I
know. Oh, get up YouTube. Nah, Explosive Part
2. On that.
It's the way I be pimping is another name for it, but Royce is on that joint and he kind of kills it. Another file sharing a favorite of mine.
All right.
So,
EG, take us home.
Take us home. Get us out of here. All right, guys. Here's your hour. Here's an hour of content.
Thank y'all for joining me. I'm gonna send it back to myself. Or no, you know what? No, I'm not gonna do that. I'm going to end the show here so I don't have to do any extra editing or recording.
There you go. Yeah.
Thank y'all for joining me. You guys, Kellen, Marcus, make sure y'all listen to their respective podcasts. And
listen, a shout out to We Should Do This Again sometime with Cat and Mark. It's amazing. I'm a big fan of that show.
I'm a big fan of Catch the Show and a big fan of Hyphenation.
I'm a big fan of Hyphenation, and I'm a big fan of We Should Do This Again sometime.
I'm a big fan of Hyphen Podcast Group, man. Have you heard them dudes?
I did. Yeah. They're the bomb.
They are the bomb, man. Especially that handsome Bane guy. Shout out to him.
The show. And with that being said, y'all just caught this show, and I will catch y'all next time. Peace.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and comment. This has been a Hyphen Podcast Network production.
Dirt at bestest. I'm getting paid at a